I'd like to speak fairly briefly this evening about the star. I don't know whether you have a Christmas tree at home. I guess everybody has to make that tough decision every year. Will it be an angel or will it be a star? I can remember when I was a little boy in the Sunday school, I started off as a donkey. If you were witty, you could make a joke about that, and nothing's changed, yes. And then I became a shepherd, but I really looked forward to that time when I was going to be a king. I preferred the king over a wise man, it sounded better. But I was going to be a king. And the thing about the kings, of course, is that despite the carol, they were not kings. They were wise men. The actual word in the Greek is that they were magi. And the magi were a tribe of learned and wise astronomers, possibly astrologers, living in the Babylonian and Persian empires. And these wise folk, these educated university types, were on the lookout for something. And they appear to have found what they were looking for in Matthew's gospel. We're told, now after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men, magi, from the east came to Jerusalem saying, where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east and have come to worship him. So evidently they were looking up at the stars, and they saw one star in particular which they identified as being for a king whom they were expecting. Now let's just remember, this is before Christianity. Most of us have heard of Jesus Christ. We've heard of at least some snippets of the story, even if we don't know all of it, or we may not even believe it. But these people were not Jews. These were Gentiles. These were pagans. They had their own gods. And yet they were looking out for someone. I put it to you that deep down, all of us are like those magi. No matter what your background and your beliefs, maybe you've got some Christian heritage in your upbringing, or maybe you haven't. But deep down, we're all on the lookout for someone. Because I put it to you that every human being is more than just a body, and more than just a body with a functioning brain, though even with some people that I question, we are in fact spiritual creatures. And we long for spiritual fulfillment. And these wise, well-educated, wealthy men were looking for a spiritual fulfillment they had not yet found. But they knew that when a particular star appeared in the sky, it was the answer to their biggest question. Now if you were to go onto the internet and type in the Star of Bethlehem, you would find thousands of explanations as to what it might be. Some say it's Jupiter and Regulus coming together, others it was a special God-made star. But I'm not here to speculate about what the star actually was, but I believe it was real. I'm more interested in why they were looking for a star. And why did they think this star belonged to this coming king of whom they knew so little? Well, the first reading we had this evening, read by Margaret, was an ancient prophecy given by a man called Balaam. Now, Balaam was not Jewish, he was not an Israelite. In fact, he's an enemy of the Israelites in the book of Numbers. And he says, there shall come a star out of Jacob. A scepter shall rise out of Israel and shall smite the corners of Moab. You know, ever since the Garden of Eden, human beings have been looking for a deliverer or a saviour. We've got it built into our psyche and into our cultural traditions. Whether you look at Saxon literature or Babylonian legends, they're waiting for and looking for the hero. Because heroes come and rescue us, and we as a race are in need of rescuing. And so starting with Balaam, they're expecting a rescuer, but the rescuer will be associated with a star. And that, I think, is why the wise men of Babylon and Persia were looking up when they were looking for their deliverer or wise men. This tradition of a Messiah with a star continued. You know, the Jews were part of the Roman Empire. Now, this country was part of the Roman Empire as well. Most of us have travelled down a Roman road to get here. That way to Ilkley, that way to Ribchester. Now, I'm pretty certain that when the Romans were actually walking up and down our lane, there was nothing here. They thought nothing of it. But we were part of the Roman Empire. And we look back and we think, oh, you know, it was great what the Romans have done for us, the roads and all the rest of it. The Jews were not quite so fond of it. To them, it was an oppressive pagan domination of their land. And in 132, the Jews rebelled a second time against the Roman Empire. Now, we have Boudicca, who failed. They had a man called Simon Bar Kokhba, who failed. And Simon Bar Kokhba claimed to be the Messiah, the very title that Jesus claimed. And Bar Kokhba means son of a star. You see, in the Jewish way of thinking, the ancient way of thinking, the Messiah, a deliverer, a rescuer, is on his way. And when he comes, the stars will show it. Now, I'm not preaching astrology tonight. I'm pretty certain that you can read those horoscopes as much as you like. They won't tell you anything. But the star that they saw did tell them. And I just want to look very briefly for 10 minutes or so at the significance of stars and the Messiah. When I was in Australia this year, for the first time ever, I think, I saw a black sky. Now, we've got some fairly dark skies around here. I live in Barnoldsbury. I see nothing but an orange haze everywhere. Here, you see a bit more of the sky. And the stars are stunning. You know, in Amos chapter 5 verse 8, another Jewish prophecy, Amos writes, "He made the Pleiades and Orion. He turns the shadow of death into morning and makes the day dark as night. He calls for the waters of the sea and pours them out on the face of the earth. The Lord is his name." And the stars are amazing because they're some of the few beautiful things you can enjoy in the darkness. In fact, the darker it is, the more stunning they are. For most other things, you know, if I were to show you a lovely painting, you'd want me to turn the lights on. You can't enjoy a good painting in the dark. But for the stars, the darker it is, the more you appreciate their awesome splendour. Jesus, when he was grown up, said in John chapter 8 and verse 12, he spoke to them saying, "I am the light of the world. He who follows me shall not walk in darkness, but have the light of life." A few years ago, I did something very foolish. I decided to cycle to church. Now, it's very foolish because I'm very unfit. So I kept having to, about every 200 yards, pull over to have a little rest. But on my way back, and I think it was coming, but it was around Christmas, the light on my bike died. It was a new light. I bought it from the shop. And of course, they make sure there's a bit of charge in it. But what I should have done is got it home and charged it properly. So I'm going down and it's dark. Now, if you're cycling in a town, the orange street lights, which before I was kind of like, they annoyed me because they stopped me seeing the stars. They allow you to see where you're going. Now, I was going down what you call Stocks or Brogden Lane at the time. And that's a very quiet lane between Rimington and Midden and Barnoldswick. And I could not see a thing because it was a dark night and there was no moon. Just to show off a little bit, I'll tell you what I did, because I think this shows I'm not only foolish, but also ingenious. Please, indulge me. I was wearing a jacket like this, and I got my phone out, and I took off my tie, and I stuffed my tie into that pocket, and I sat my phone on the tie and had the light on it. Now, as far as torches go, it was pretty rubbish. but it meant I didn't die. So in that regard, I think it was great. But what Jesus is saying there in John chapter 8 is that spiritually, each one of us is in darkness. I don't mean physical darkness. I don't mean the darkness you have when your light goes out on your bike. Spiritually, we can't see where we're going. You know, there's a whole load of people out there, and maybe in here, who are afraid to die. And I say to them, come to him who is the light of the world. Come to him whose symbol was that bright, shining star. In our lives, some of us have made some pretty bad mistakes. And maybe we look back with some of the things we've done with shame. Well, let me tell you, even the darkest of lives can be made bright and wholesome with the child of Bethlehem. In Daniel, this time another Jewish prophet, he says in chapter 12, verse 3, those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the firmament, and those who turn many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. And Daniel here is, I think, saying that the stars are a picture of wisdom. Now, wisdom, I think, is different to being clever or knowing things. Now, this is a well-known cliche, but it has been said that knowledge is knowing that a tomato is a fruit and not a vegetable. Wisdom is not putting it on a fruit salad. You see the difference there between knowledge and wisdom? There are some clever people out there who know far more than I ever will. But that doesn't mean they are wise. I've got a friend who did not go to university, and he enjoys reminding me that I cannot change a plug socket. And the conversation will go something like that. Well, you know, you spent 3 years at university and you can't even do this. And of course he's right. You see, it's possible to be clever, to know an awful lot, and yet to be incredibly foolish. Well, we also heard this evening, this time from Hazel, John chapter 1 verse 1. It's actually the text I preached upon last year. I don't expect you to remember that. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And the Word, Logos in the Greek, is a title for the Messiah, a title for Jesus Christ. And the Word can mean expression, it can mean reason, it can sometimes mean wisdom. Christ, the wisdom of God. So a star shines in Bethlehem and it illuminates the sky because it's telling the wise men looking for it and for all of us hearing the story, one is born who's incredibly wise and wise people continue to seek him. Let me read this time from Deuteronomy, my penultimate little reading. From Deuteronomy 4 verse 19, take heed lest you lift your eyes to the heavens. And when you see the sun, the moon, and the stars, all the hosts of heaven, you feel driven to worship them and serve them, which the Lord your God has given to all the peoples under the whole heaven as a heritage. You know, we as a human race have often engaged in something called astrolatry. Now, I didn't know what that word meant until preparing for this. It's quite obvious when you look at it. It means the worship of the stars. And the stars, of course, are beautiful and they stand out and they appear to move of their own volition. And you can see why ancient folk thought them fit to worship. Indeed, some of the days of our week are based upon the assumption that ancient people worship them. Monday is moon day, Sunday is the sun day. The gods of Rome lent their names to the planets of our solar system. And Moses there in Deuteronomy is worshipping, is warning people, do not worship the stars. And people always have done. And yet there is a star here, which is not itself to be worshipped, but it's pointing to one who is. What did the wise men say to Herod? For we have seen his star in the east and have come to respect him? No. Like him? No. Put pictures of him on our Christmas cards? No. To worship him. So the star must not be worshipped. In fact, people must not be worshipped either. Another figure in the Christmas story is King Herod the baddie. But Herod was not as bad as the Roman Emperor, Augustus. You see, Augustus referred to himself as the divine Augustus. He claimed to be a god on earth. Quite what they made of that at his funeral, I don't know. Because these gods had a habit of dying, which doesn't seem very godlike to me. But stars have been identified in the Bible with the worship of idols. And yet here in the Christmas story, the wise men associate the one linked to this star with worship. And I put it to you that Jesus Christ, the one whose birth, whose nativity we mark and celebrate in this coming week, is the only one worthy and entitled to our worship. You see, every other human being who desires the worship of other people is wrong. You know, there are countries in the world this evening whereby you've got to hang pictures of the great leader up in your house and you can't say anything wrong of them. It's almost though they promoted themselves to being little gods. Well, one is being born, and the wise men of Babylon knew it. One is being born, whose birth, heralded by a star, invites us to worship him. Now, worship comes from the word worth-ship, to give worth to something. And I invite you this evening to worship Christ, to give him worth, and the value to which he is entitled. The final little passage, the final ancient prophecy that talks about stars that perhaps the Magi were aware of, is Isaiah chapter 13 and verse 10. And you might think a strange passage to read at a carol service, because Isaiah says once more, "For the stars of heaven and their constellations will not give their light. The sun will be darkened in its going forth, and the moon will not cause its light to shine." Now, Jesus himself made a similar statement. He said in Matthew 24, "Immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from heaven and the powers of the heavens will be shaken." So Jesus says something very similar to what Isaiah said, but there's an 800-year gap between them. Now, what has that got to do with what I'm talking about? Well, both Isaiah and Jesus are talking about Judgment Day. Now, Judgment Day is not a very popular concept. And it's the belief taught in the Bible and by other religions, funnily enough, that the day is coming when everyone who has ever lived will have to give account of him or herself to God. Now, I've done some things in my life of which I'm not proud. I've done some things which I would not want you to know about. And Isaiah appears to be saying that when the judgment day comes, a sign of it will be the disappearance of the stars from the sky. So a black sky and no sun and no moon, this was the ancient Hebrew understanding of what Judgment Day was going to be like. When there are no stars and there's no sun and there's no moon, expect to be judged. Now let's reverse that. It means when you go outside and you see a starry sky, Judgment Day is not upon us. In fact, the creation of a brand new star indicates not just that judgment day is delayed, but that mercy is granted. Mercy is a great word. It means withholding judgment. Withholding punishment that is deserved. And if judgment day is coming, with all, you know, its terrifying threat of punishment, well, the Star of Bethlehem indicates that mercy has arrived as well. I said before that judgment day was a terrifying prospect. You know, someone told me, who I think knows what they're talking about, that nothing from the internet is ever deleted. So every email you think you've deleted, actually somewhere it is stored. And every, you know, angry comment you made on social media, someone has a record of it. And every website you've been on, someone knows. Now I find that quite terrifying. Although if anyone looks at my search history, they'll think what a boring guy he was, with, you know. But in one respect, I'm scared of God knowing everything I've done. But the point of the Christmas story is that people who've done things wrong, the theological term is a sinner. I'm a sinner. Sinners don't have to be afraid of judgment. Sinners no longer have to be afraid of meeting God. Sinners no longer have to be afraid of dying. Because that great Star of Bethlehem, heralding Jesus Christ's birth, is a reminder that there is mercy available. You know, the difference between a Christian and anyone else is not that a Christian is without sin, far from it, but a Christian is one whose sin has been forgiven. There are two types of human being, let me tell you. There's not black and white, or gay or straight, or any other distinction. There are sinners who have been forgiven, and there are sinners who haven't been forgiven. And the message of the Christmas story is not go and decorate your homes. It's not go and max out the credit card. It's not even go and spend a nice family day together on the 25th of December, though I hope you will. The message of the Christmas story is all those bad things that you have done, you can be forgiven of them. Because Jesus Christ, the child in the manger, grew up and he died upon the cross that our sin might be paid for. This is the message of the star. In summary, and it comes once more from Isaiah, seek ye the Lord while he may be found, call ye upon him while he is near. Let the wicked forsake his way, and the unrighteous man his thoughts. Let him return unto the Lord, and he will have mercy upon him, and to our God, for he will abundantly pardon. A star shone 2,000 years ago. To remind you and me, as well as the wise men who lived back then, that there is mercy in heaven. That's the message of Christmas. There's mercy for people who don't deserve it. There's mercy for people who've made mistakes. There's mercy for people who are ashamed of their past. Those magi found Jesus and they worshipped him. I don't know what they did afterwards, I guess they went home. But something tells me they went home really quite different. God bless you.